The Guardian.
Hello there, listener. AC Jimbo here. Now, I'm still on my summer holidays, but I've just popped in to introduce you to a very tantalising tale indeed. It's about the most engrossing German goalie to have graced English football since Bert Trautmann, and it's not Jens Lehmann.
I promised myself when I was a little boy, I was have this first communion, and you know, when the Catholic priest gives you the thing. The bishop asked me when I was like 8 years old, what will you become? Is it a policeman? I will be a pilot. And I said, I tell you right now, I will be a professional footballer all the way. And I always remember that. And whenever I had a setback, I always said, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to say, I am meant to be a professional footballer and I will work in football all my life. And that is something which I had as a goal. This goal I never lost out of my sight, and so far, so good.
The Global Goalie. Pfaffenstiel.
Hi, I'm Lutz. I'm the Global Goalie. Let's have a look inside.
Favorite German? Lutz Pfaffenstiel.
The ultimate football journeyman. Someone's breathing's
touching. Pfaffenstiel off his line.
Lutz Pfaffenstiel. Like someone else is pulling the strings on
every move. I am calling. Hello, I'm Ian McIntosh, and this is The Global Goalkeeper, the story of Lutz Pfaffenstiel. The voice you heard back at the beginning, describing the premonition at communion, that was Lutz. And the thing that elevates him from well-travelled pro to pub quiz answer is this. Lutz Pfaffenstiel is the only professional footballer to have played in all six FIFA confederations. In a career that puts a journey into journeyman, Lutz played for 25 different clubs, and along the way there were stops in England and Finland, in Namibia and Malaysia, in Albania and Armenia, in Canada and Norway. I think you get the idea. Instead of mind-boggling transfer fees, Lutz clocked up Galactico-level air miles. So, where to begin this amazing journey?
For me, the problem was when I got the offers from Bayern Munich.
That's right. This most unorthodox of careers began with the 19-year-old Lutz, who had represented Germany 5 times at youth level, rejecting one of the European powerhouses and deciding instead to stay in the first team at the Bavarian league club FC Bad Kotzing.
Then I got an offer from Bayern Munich where they're saying, OK, you're coming to us, but you're playing in the second team. The second team was in the same league as the team I played for. I didn't see the sense of moving to a bigger club if I'm playing already senior football. And I categorically refused, which made lots of people worry or actually wonder what actually is wrong with me, because you don't normally turn down Bayern Munich. I didn't want to turn them down for the reason of being cool. I thought I want to play the best football possible in this time of my age. So the day came when I came out from a training and an agent stood there and said, you know, I read this story and I can get you straight away a professional contract. So I expected everything, Scotland or whatever. And he said, like, no, it's in Malaysia. So I first was thinking if he's a psychopath. But after looking into the situation, playing in front of 30, 40,000 people, earning decent money, you know, kind of like I looked at it as a diversion. I thought, like, well, if I'm really as good as I think I am, I will be very good in Asia. I will come back to Europe with a bang. So that was my idea.
Lutz played well enough for Penang FA in Malaysia and soon caught the attention of some visiting English scouts. He was offered a deal with Wimbledon, who at the time were holding their own in the Premier League. His plan seemed to be working and the big time beckoned. Well, not quite.
I didn't realize it. Basically, I was in exactly the same situation as I was in. Would have been in Bayern Munich. I was like a young goalkeeper playing for the second team. So, basically, the first choice was not necessarily the right one.
Over the course of three frustrating years in English football, Lutz didn't make a single first-team appearance. So on he went, making stops in South Africa, Finland, Singapore and New Zealand over the next 4 years. The further he drifted down the road of becoming a football nomad, the more his dreams of becoming a top goalkeeper seemed to fade away. But Lutz found he had another skill that boded well for a life in football, where players below the top level usually have pretty peripatetic careers. Far from being unsettled by change, Lutz embraced it.
But I did also started to enjoy the culture, you know, the food, the weather. It was all different. The way people lived, the things people liked, everything was different. And I realized that I actually quite good in amending to that, kind of like dip in a different culture and enjoy it. Not, I never was the guy who have to eat his German sausage. When I'm playing in America, you know, I mean, I don't really need it.
Playing abroad, Lutz soon found himself confronted with bigger problems than the availability of Bratwurst. In 1996, he made a pit stop at the Orlando Pirates, a South African club based in Johannesburg. It was a strange time to be in South Africa. Apartheid had ended, and Nelson Mandela had recently been elected president. But Lutz still found himself in a country that was trying to consolidate its Rainbow Nation present with over 40 years of institutionalized racial discrimination.
That's something what I experienced there is something you can't forget. You know, this apartheid politics, they were still somehow in the heads of the people. And I felt that. And it was for me as a foreigner, it's kind of like a very pure thinking kid from the Bavarian forest. There was a bus for black people, there was a bus for white people, there was an entrance for black people, an entrance for white people. There was, for me, something my brain didn't manage to realize. Everybody could go with the bus they want to, but it was still like that the black people used these buses, the other ones used that. And in the football, football was a black sport. There was not many white people playing football. So when I came there to Orlando Pirates, which is a team which is very much a team of the people, a team of the public, I felt it very fast that they were wondering, what is this white kid doing here? He's not supposed to be here. In this area, there were lots of stabbings, lots of violence, murders, everything was there. So it was for me like kind of like I went very naive in this whole situation. I didn't really realize how is it possible that just because of my skin color or because of the way I look, that my teammates or the supporters, they don't like me, you know. I mean, obviously, looking back in time and looking at what happened at the apartheid, I do understand very well why they were very timid or suspicious about me, which it took actually didn't take that long till the local boys also started to like me because I'm, you know, they realized I'm not the typical white person which runs around in South Africa.
After 7 appearances for the Pirates, Lutz packed up his bags and headed to Scandinavia, the polar opposite of post-apartheid South Africa.
Yeah, Finland was one of the most quiet stations in my career. Not many things are happening, you know. It was very, very solid, typical Scandinavian football, no scandals. The only disappointing thing was when the season got exciting towards the end of September, early October. That's when the ice hockey season started and people mostly cheering for the hockey teams, not even for the football. So thinking back about that, it was one of the little regrets about Finnish football. But overall, it was a nice time over there, also having won the cup and the league with Hakka. So I'm having good memories about that.
After spells at TPV and Hakka in 1997, Lutz returned to his native Germany, settling at SV Wacker Burghausen. But after an underwhelming season, in which he made only 3 appearances, he decided to jet off again.
Because I didn't really, surprisingly, feel home anymore in Germany after travelling for so many years.
Lutz signed for Geylang United, one of the top clubs in Singapore.
Yeah, I mean, I took the gamble to go back to Asia, and the start was absolutely magnificent. You know, when I came in, the team had a disappointing spell, being in the middle of the table. I came in the second half of the season, not losing a single game anymore, playing, I think, out of 11 games, 8 clean sheets and climbing up to the second place in the table, where the owner of the club decided we invest a little bit more, signed a few more national players, brought in two good foreigners, and for the next season we were the big favourites.
And it's at this time where it all went peak tong for Lutz Pfannenstiel.
Towards the middle of the season, some kind of like big scandal happened. It's very difficult to explain in a few words. I only can say that far that I got approached by a person claiming to be a golf trainer, a golf professional. And he just was asking me normal basic fan questions like lots of football fans do. Nothing else than saying, hey, next week you're playing against Team X, like let's say Vancouver Whitecaps, what's the story? And of course, I gave the answer like every other football player, every other professional will give. We are in a good shape and we're going to win the next game. I met this person three times in my life, always like 3-4 days prior to a match. Once at a petrol station, once in a shopping center, once in a restaurant, where always other people were around me. Three times the same conversations happened, three times I gave the same answer. We are in good shape and we're going to win. And around 3 months after the last encounter, somebody knocked on my door. It was the undercover police.
Open it or rip it off.
They smashed my house. They smashed my nose and saying that I basically was involved in a corruption scandal, in a match fixing scandal. Well, I actually took it very, very easy because I thought, well, I haven't done anything wrong. Let them show me what they actually talking about. Once they showed me the guy who was then coincidentally this golf professional, I realized that I have to be careful and things are not right. And it turned out that this golf professional was actually, well, he was a golf professional, but he also was a little local bookmaker who was gambling on football games. And when he got caught for something else, which was not even related to me or to football at all, yeah, he made a deal with the government, with the police, saying, look, I tell you a few foreign footballers I've spoken to. It would be much more interesting if you catch a foreign player or a big name player instead of me as a local little bookmaker. So he named a few guys. Also, my name was there. And when me and another player got arrested, I basically was very naive, and instead of saying I never saw this guy, I gave a very honest answer because I did not know what to expect. And I said, yes, I saw this guy three times, I don't know his name. That exactly was the conversation, what happened. He asked me if we're going to win, or if he asked me in what shape we are. Great shape, we're going to win. Well, killed me in Singapore because the police officer told me, because of that statement, I will go to prison. And what I didn't know was that this bookmaker gave the same statement, but he was adding a little part of it, saying if he's going to bet, he would give me a little bonus if the bet is coming true. And I apparently have said to him, yes, okay. I mean, this conversation never happened, but it was word against word. And they wanted to catch a big fish. At this moment in time, I was very popular, not just on the football pitch. I also was modeling for Armani, and I was having my own TV show presenting the English Premier League highlights. So when they realized they can get a big name, obviously they started to mix around and see what exactly they can do. So it came down to that there was a young judge. The statement was my version against the guy's version, and I was the one who paid the price and went to prison for nearly 5 months. But, you know, drinking water out of a toilet, getting punched in the face for breakfast, and sleeping on the floor, trying not to get raped by people who are on death row, I think it's not necessarily a funny thing for a professional footballer who tried to win a game. The problems I have, the horrible times, the humiliation I got from the wardens in prison, from the other, well, let's call it the guys who were in prison, the criminal boys. It was like they made me feel like daily like a piece of crap, you know. I was never really, I had a big lack of self-confidence. I didn't know where I stand. I didn't know if I still want to live, if I still can live. Of course, every day I had the thoughts, how do I kill myself? Do I want to live? What will happen after? So these doubts were there. How do I kill myself? Do I want to live? Do I want to live? How do I kill myself? Was found guilty for a charge which does not exist in the Western world. I was not found guilty for match fixing. I was not found guilty for corruption because obviously there was no proof whatsoever. I was found guilty for a verbal corrupt agreement, meaning for the intention to do something criminal or to do something corrupt. And that is something which does not exist. So obviously, in the end of the day, I was cleared by the International Court of Law. I still have a clean German police record. I was cleared. And in the end of the day, Singapore stole a big part of my life. They destroyed me for a few years mentally. I was in one of the worst, one of the hardest prisons in the world for something I haven't done. There was a few things which kept me going. I mean, I read twice the Bible, which, you know, I'm born in a very Catholic area in Germany, but I'm not the biggest churchgoer in the world. However, it's exactly like people say, in the worst times, you try to find something which helps you, and it's mostly the religion. But that's life, that's life. I think I learned, if there's one thing I learned in prison, it was that try to look at things positive. There is not many positive things I could look at, but at least I knew it made me into a better person. I know how to appreciate things in life. And it changed my whole looking into the future and trying to look at other people to help and make things for other people easier than it was before. Because before I was a spoiled professional footballer, having a good salary, enjoying life, but didn't really knew what is important.
After his release from prison in 2000, Lutz continued his global odyssey. The next port of call was New Zealand, before he returned to England with non-league Bradford Park Avenue. Now, you could forgive Lutz for thinking he was due a run of good fortune, but things didn't quite work out like that. In a match for Bradford, Lutz was involved in a collision with an opposing forward that was so violent, it caused both of his lungs to collapse. He was declared dead on the field 3 times. Miraculously, he survived. And on he went, zigzagging between New Zealand again, Norway, Canada, Armenia, Albania, before finally ending his epic journey in Namibia with Ramblers FC. He played with the Ramblers for 2 years, which was as long as Lutz had ever stayed with any of his other 24 clubs. After his retirement in 2011, Lutz continued to steer well clear of a conventional career path. He had a spell as the Cuban national team's goalkeeping coach. He also founded his own non-profit organisation, Global United, an international football club that aims to spread the word about climate change. In 2014, he released his autobiography, The Unstoppable Goalkeeper.
It basically tells the way I feel it, the way I think about football and travelling. My life was not just about professional football, it's also about cultures, it's also about adopting to the different lifestyles. It was more about a lesson of life instead of just a normal, basic football career.
And obviously there are plans afoot to bring Lutz's life to the big screen.
I'm still very close of actually doing a deal for a movie, where I'm still having some trouble with some American movie makers or actually production companies because I'm a little bit stubborn. I would like this story to be told the way it really was. I would like this story to be told what exactly happened in prison, why it happened. The person who should play me should understand how it really was. And if you're making a movie and it's based on a true story, you know, the movie makers, they're putting in things, they putting things bigger, other things smaller, and in the end, there's a completely different story. And my story was not just about prison and dying. There's so many other things. And I know exactly if I sell the movie rights to the wrong person, it will be a nice prison story. It will be about fighting. It will be about dying. It will be about all the bad things. But it's not the story I want to tell.
The Global Goalkeeper was originally broadcast on Howler Radio. It was written and produced by Matthew Nelson and presented by me, Ian McIntosh. Football Weekly Presents is edited by Ben Green for The Guardian. Thanks for listening.